There you go. I know June would like to send me out to the back 40. That's right. Anyway, that's Brian Kelly, and this is Phil Mee saying happy trails until we meet again shortly.
Until we meet again.
We'll be back your way with Community Conversation on The Morning Show. Coming up next from WRCO-FM in Richland Center, Wisconsin, and WRCO.com. The update at 9 from ABC News is sponsored by Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, serving Southwest Wisconsin since 1889, and the Phoenix Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, along with video games. It's currently 27 degrees.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Sources tell ABC that President Trump will sign an executive order this afternoon telling the Department of Education it needs to shut down. Doing so would actually require an act of Congress, but the order would begin the process. The Trump administration also saying that it's said to be planning a swath of land where military would be granted new authority to hold migrants who have crossed the border from Mexico.
Sources tell us that the Trump administration is considering dramatically expanding the role of the U.S. military along the southern border. The plan, sources say, includes creating a buffer zone along the border that would allow military personnel to temporarily hold migrants who cross into the U.S. illegally until federal law enforcement arrives.
ABC Chief White House Correspondent Mary Bruce. Israeli strikes have killed at least 85 people overnight, according to the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry. The Israeli military restoring a blockade on northern Gaza, leaving only one passage south in the territory. This is ABC News. Waiting in line at the DMV has always been something of a joke. Now, however, it's hit a whole new level. Here's ABC's Andrew Dimbert.
DMVs around the country are packed as people line up for hours to get their real ID. What's a real ID? It's a new form of identification conceived by Congress after 9/11 that requires more of your personal information to be verified. Beginning on May 7th, if you're 18 or older, you'll need either a passport or a Real ID compliant document to fly domestically within the U.S. If you are able to get an appointment for your Real ID, be sure to bring the right documents. Requirements vary by state.
CEO turned disruptor Alan Levy is betting $1 million that artificial intelligence really is ready to take on the world. He has put up that much, challenging one of the world's best known gamblers, Sean Perry, in a March Madness bracket pool challenge. The AI program has picked Houston to win it all. Perry is going with Duke. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
You work hard. Making the right choice for lunch isn't hard. The Phoenix Center opens at 11 Monday through Sunday with all your lunchtime favorites. Burgers, salads, terrific appetizers, specialty sandwiches, wraps, and more. Easy in, easy out. The Phoenix Center is the perfect way to break up the day. Can't get away for lunch? Let the team at the Phoenix Center serve you a great meal tonight, including the world-famous Phoenix Center Pizza. Call ahead at 649-7469 for carryout from the Phoenix Center in Richland Center.
This is Mark Jelenic of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service. We understand the loss of a loved one is a complicated and very stressful time for surviving family members. We pride ourselves on making final arrangements convenient and stress-free. Our services and memorial facilities have been designed with your family's comfort and convenience in mind. We are equipped to meet all of your requests, allowing you time to connect with family and friends while celebrating and reflecting on your loved one's life. The Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service's dedicated funeral directors and staff are here for you.
WRCO Hometown Weather Watch is sponsored by the Schultz Mortgage Team. Call 608-738-8765. Learn how you can own a home without needing 20% down.
Today, the forecast calls for a high of 39. Some clouds at times. Northwest winds could pick up to between 10 and 20 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy and cool, a low of 25. Friday, partly to mostly cloudy and a high of 52. Friday night, 21 with sprinkles and flurries possible. Saturday's 42 degrees. And Sunday, 46 with a little bit more scattered rain that could mix with a bit of snow. Right now, WRCO Studios, following the daytime high yesterday of right there at the upper 30s, 39 degrees. We were at 29 at midnight, down to 23 this morning, and right now it is 27 degrees. There were a few school districts that started a little bit late today, 2 hours late, but for the most part, everything is rolling now this morning and going on time after a few slippery roads to start the day. Today's morning show is coming up next.
It's the spring favorite sale at Macy's, which means it's the best time to shop for all the new looks you love, like bold floral dresses for $150 and under, and 50 to 75% off lightweight suits for any occasion, plus 30% off denim handbags that bring the whole look together. So come into Macy's and find a few of your favorites for spring, or maybe even more than a few, only through Sunday. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is Dan Miller, Old Cooch Books and Libations, downtown Richland Center. We call that this time of year was cabin fever. People come out of nowhere and come into town because they've burned too many fires. And we're waiting for you here at Old Cooch Books and Libations with all kinds of new records. You can get out your old phonograph and have a good time, all because of Old Cooch Books and Libations, 130 South Main, downtown Richland Center.
Welcome to Richland Family Restaurant Studios, where great music and good times meet.
On our morning show today, Sally Probasca is here, and she is out here to make sure that all artists in the area are aware of an upcoming show in the Richland Center and Spring Green areas. It will be at Wyoming Valley Cultural Arts Center again this year with some special features. The entry and payment for all artists' work is coming up Saturday, March 29th, and each artist can enter up to two pieces of art items. There also will be artwork due on Saturday, April 5th, and the workshop will be happening on Saturday, April 19th. So good to have you in the studio with us, Sally. Can you give us a little bit of your background?
My background, I've been, as a non-professional artist, I've been drawing and enjoying art my whole life. When I had a job that was not art-related and had a family and children, I ended up really only being able to draw my children, my friends, children's friends, that type of thing to keep my interest. And then once I retired from a non-art job, I really loved learning more about art and then easily became part of several art groups that encourage other artists to learn, to help others, that type of thing.
Is there a big group in the area of artists?
Well, it's like so many hidden hobbies or interests. Yes, the answer to that is yes, but a lot of them need encouragement to get out there and show the things that they love doing that normally their job or their home life or whatever doesn't is totally unrelated, and this is such a wonderful pastime for them.
And you're here to promote the fact that there's a call for non-professional artists. And we had this event on the air with us last year. It's at Wyoming Valley Cultural Arts Center in Spring Green coming up. But it's really for all ages, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, we're fairly unique. There are 20 such annual exhibits all around the state of Wisconsin. They are sponsored by a statewide organization, the Association of Wisconsin Artists. I'm part of that group, and then locally, Richland Area Arts Council, which does business as the Red Door Gallery, sponsors one of these events every year. But this event is unique in that it typically mixes adult artists with teen artists. The gallery has been supporting separately teen artists for a number of years, but what we enjoy about this particularly is having the two groups together, learning from each other, because as some people know, not everyone, teen artists are incredibly talented. And we have a wonderful high school teacher and middle school teacher here just in Richland Center. That's Craig Rogers. And then we also encourage all high schools around the southwestern part of Wisconsin to participate and encourage their teens to join the adult artists.
So when the teens, the high school age artists, are they selected then? Are there items or artwork selected for the show, or how does that work, Sally?
Well, honestly, we reach out to teachers. Our coordinator for the teens this year is Erin Moit Thering, a younger woman who actually has Teens for Children. She happens to be working for the state of Wisconsin in tourism. And for the last year and then this year, Erin is reaching out to area high school teachers all over the area to encourage their students to participate. Any one of their students can participate. We even encourage kids that might be homeschooled to contact Erin, and I can provide you, Phil, with her email so that they can also participate if they want.
What kind of artwork will the students be showing? Is it strictly painting, or what do they usually enter?
Well, not surprisingly, students are really way advanced of adults. We last year had digital art. We had a video from one of the students. They are very diverse, and we encourage from both the teens and the adults to feel free to enter whatever they consider an art project. And that can be three-dimensional, it can be sculpture, it can be ceramics, it can be digital art, which is more of a new form of artistic expression. Certainly can be painting, drawing, whatever.
I've had the opportunity to be at some high school art shows or just walking through some of the displays, and they just wow me. It's just amazing what some of these kids can do, isn't it?
Really, and that's one of the things we do to sort of highlight that. When we hang the show at Wyoming Valley, which, by the way, is an incredibly beautiful venue, we commingle the student art and the adult art. And the only way you can tell the difference is the label happens to be a different color. And that's really for the benefit of the judge who goes through the artwork and appraises, you know, what's going on, what in her or his opinion is really outstanding kinds of works. But no, the kids are incredibly talented.
Can you talk about some of the deadlines coming up, Sally, then, as far as when people can enter?
Right. Our deadline to enter is March 29th. We actually hang the show, and that's when the drop-off of art is at the venue, Wyoming Valley, which is south of Spring Green on Highway 23. That is going to be on April 5th. That's a Saturday, and we'll be there from probably 10 to noon. So that's when all the artists will drop off their work. We're lucky in that our judge has volunteered to even help us hang the art. If you have a minute, I'd like to say a little bit about her.
Sure, go ahead.
Her name is Lisa Humpke. She has been a teacher in art for many, many years. Her own work is so fun and so interesting. It's mixed media. She uses found objects, paint, fabric to create, and then she's taught both in Dodgeville and I think in Muscadet. She'll be the judge, and then she'll simply walk around the room. She'll probably see the show several different times, and then the show will she'll help us hang on the 5th of April, and then the show will be up for 2 weeks, and then the final workshop day is April 19th on a Saturday.
Tell us about the workshop and what happens that day.
One of the purposes of the workshop is not just to be able to see other people's work, and there are awards that are given for different levels of expertise, but we really feel, especially the gallery feels this way, and also the overall sponsor, Association of Wisconsin Artists, that it's educational. This judge is willing to not only give certain awards that are called state awards, certain awards that are called honorable mention, but she is willing to critique one piece of every artist's work, whether or not they have been awarded at a certain level. And that's when you hear about what standards she used to make her appraisal, what kind of improvement that she might suggest that the artist might consider for the next time. But it's usually done in a very supportive kind of way. And that's one of the reasons we think the exhibit is really beneficial, because it's really helpful and educational. These are all people that are, they don't make their living by art, but they love art. They love to do art. And that's why we encourage them to take the plunge and show their art.
As an adult, I would guess you could be inspired by the young artists and vice versa, right?
It's unbelievable. I mean, really, it's humbling as an artist. I've been doing watercolor for like 20 years. I've done other kinds of things, and I'm not unusual as an adult artist. But we also find if we sponsor exhibits like this, we have the chance to bring in people that have been doing this for a long time or a short time. They're just learning, but they've never had, and it takes nerve to like, I'm just going to bite the bullet and enter. But I should mention, and I didn't mean to overlook this at all, all of this is sponsored by nonprofits. So we have a $30 entry fee. And it may seem a lot, but we have to pay honoraria to both the judge. We also have a workshop that I can tell you a little bit about that's a different person. We have to pay for the venue. We have to pay for refreshments, all of that type of thing. But obviously, and we have to subsidize this, but it's worth every penny, worth every penny.
I'm sure. Tell us about the presenter.
The presenter is, her name is Kathy Murphy. She's a multimedia artist. She does she's a wonderful photographer. She's a wonderful painter. She also does books, which I certainly am not familiar with, and I haven't done them. But she creates her own paper, the liners. She stitches them together. I mean, and they can be quite complex. What we've asked her to do for this, though, is do something very simple so that everyone who attends gets a booklet that they have made, a small booklet with apparently what's called Japanese binding, which I have certainly never done. And then she will provide all the materials. No one has to do anything about that. And so that's what, and then she'll also bring to show, because I've asked her to do this, all the different complex, different kinds of books that she's made. It's really a fun media.
You mentioned the workshop. Could you go into a little bit more detail about that?
Well, the workshop will be probably run roughly from 9:30 to 2:30, again at Wyoming Valley, and that's on the 5th. And we provide refreshments when they come in. They can walk around the venue, which is three large, huge rooms, and with large windows, great, a wonderful hanging system. And then at 10, Kathy will do her workshop and then provide all the materials, and people will learn more about how to do that kind of process. Then people will break for lunch. In town, you can bring your own food. We will have, again, refreshments in the morning, refreshments in the afternoon, coffee, tea, lemonade, water. And then the afternoon, the judge, Lisa Humpke, will do a short presentation, and then she will move around those three rooms and give a critique, again, for one piece of everybody who has entered the show, whether or not they're actually can be there. And teachers also come, which is wonderful.
We had a couple of students in here last year that displayed, and I think one of them was already maybe even selling some of their things, you know. So
Yeah. That's
probably another opportunity, Sally, is to kind of network and kind of figure out, pick each other's brains and see what works and what doesn't for each person, right?
I mean, that's really why it's wonderful if artists can get together informally. Personally, I'm in a group that meets Wednesday morning. There's not really a teacher, but we sort of teach each other. And that's, of course, what kids get in the classroom. And so even these homeschool kids, we'd like them to have the opportunity to be amongst others, because there's plenty of time to walk around, meet other artists. How did you do this? What material did you use? Where did you get that? I mean, sort of things that you really learn from each other.
there are artists, I'm guessing, that could be listening too that are maybe a little intimidated. I mean, art is such a personal thing.
Yes.
And maybe no one has ever seen their work except maybe immediate family. So how do you kind of get them off the shelf and try
to
get
them? Well, you just try to encourage them and know it's a very safe environment. And if it's a generalization, but many artists are shy. I mean, they go to art fairs, but they'd rather sort of sit in the back and have somebody else talk to customers. Like at the gallery, we probably have 20 local artists, which is fabulous, all different media, but probably four or five of us are the ones that actually work there. It's all volunteer, and then the other people can do their art, live their lives, whatever, but are able to show their art. And again, all of these people are non-professional.
Could you talk about your sponsors for this year's event?
Yeah, we're so lucky. Wyoming Valley, it's a Frank Lloyd Wright structure, but they're struggling. You can imagine maintaining a Frank Lloyd Wright structure. So they're completely volunteer. They have applied for a grant that has been provided by River Valley Arts, which is in Spring Green. So that helps us. We get a subsidy from Association of Wisconsin Artists, who's one of the overall co-sponsors. And then the Richland Area Arts Council, again, Red Door Gallery is one of our enterprises. We try to donate also. We certainly are able to. That's one of the great things about Wyoming Valley. We can bring in our own food. The grant helps us pay for the judge, pay for the presenter, food. The kids always get some type of gift to encourage them to go on for their arts. So all of those entities are, you know, sponsors for us, as well as, in general, the overall state organization, Association of Wisconsin Artists, gets a grant every year from the state organization, the Arts Board, which we hope will continue. We'll see.
Red Door Gallery is one of our businesses in downtown Richland Center. Could you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, they've been around, I might have been there maybe about 15 years. Red Door has been there for over 50 years. We've moved to different locations. We used to be down on Lower Court Street. Right now we're at 148 West Court Street, between Court and Main, the furniture and furnishing store. And then next to us is an insurance agency. We literally have artists that do glass, wood, fiber, ceramics, oil, acrylic, watercolor, a lot of beautiful wood functional kinds of items. And again, close to 20 artists, almost all from the Richland area or surrounding area kind of thing. And then, I mentioned photography. I hope I'm not missing it, but a real mix. Oh, and we have one guy, a young guy, Jake Lee. He does digital art and literally does these fantastic, huge drawings, I think using, I don't know if it's oil or watercolor or markers, but often of odd characters and males and females, often young, and then he uses digital art to project them onto canvas. Very functional wood artists. Scarves, fabric, just a whole bunch of stuff. And it's really fun, the diversity. And when you're there, that's what's interesting. When people come in, they have obviously very different tastes. I mean, I notice in your station, you have several Jim Wachtendonk's paintings, often of guitars, a wonderful person. He is not in the gallery right now, but he used to be. And he is a very different style of art. And so, like Ricky Bishop is one of our co-coordinators. She and I are helping with the adult, and then Aaron Moyt-Thering is doing the teens of this program. Ricky teaches for us. I mean, it's one of the many things that we do. She teaches watercolor. She's fabulous. She can take anybody, an entry-level person, and put them in a very supportive environment, very positive about that, and teach them in a simple way which doesn't intimidate them, as opposed to having some kind of huge landscape that's very complicated. Then people think, I can't do this, and then they walk away. Just not the way to do it. So.
I've seen adults, you know, especially like retirement age and that kind of thing, that have never painted in their lives.
Exactly.
All of a sudden, here it comes. I mean, is there artistry in all of us, Sally, or how do you see it?
Some people think, oh, I can't draw. I mean, literally, if you take a class from Ricky, yeah, you have to start people at the level that they're at. I mean, I've had friends who want to learn, and they take watercolor, one of the most difficult media to control. They want to do a landscape, one of the most difficult kinds of things. I mean, you need to start people on very simple kinds of things so they can be successful, so they get some confidence. And that's the kind of teacher Ricky is, kind of thing.
And those classes are held right there?
Yeah, we hold them at the gallery. She has a website. We have a Facebook account, Red Door. Oh, and we have a website, reddoorgallery.org, all one word. So we try to put promotion out there. Dave at the Richland Observer is a wonderful guy, and we try to put in, as our budget allows, because we're a nonprofit, ads as often as we can here and in local media area kinds of things. And really, the only reason we're at a Spring Green venue for this is we haven't been able to find a venue that has a really good hanging system in the Richland Center area. But we've been at Schmidt Woodland Hills, a wonderful place. They've been so great to us. We also have to have a place secure for artwork, because we have jewelry. I should have mentioned that. Beautiful jewelry. Several, two and three jewelry artists. Joan Bailey, who is our gallery manager as well as our president of the organization, is a fabulous jewelry artist. So that's, you know, one of the things working there is seeing all the things and trying not to buy too much yourself, unfortunately.
Something for everybody.
Yes, like. Yes.
Do you know the hours for Wyoming Valley Cultural Arts Center?
They have really wonky hours. They have to make ends meet. They're trying to start weddings. They have yoga class, but it's very varied. And I honestly, it's too irregular for me to say, unfortunately. The gallery has limited hours, but at least we're able to staff Wednesday, Thursday, Friday from 11 to 3 and Saturday from 10 to 2. Again, trying to expand. We certainly cater mostly to locals who are really good about trying to avoid big box stores and coming to get something unique, because a lot of people buy gifts there, and that's a really fun thing for people to do.
A perfect thing that's not like any other.
No, right? I mean, anniversaries, sure. What, every time of the year, that kind of thing.
So the deadline is coming up here for entry and payment for the upcoming show. Anything else you wanted to add about this year's show?
I can give my email for questions and contacts. It's Sally, S-A-L-L-Y, Probasco, P as in Peter, R-O, B as in boy, A, S as in Sam, C-O, at gmail.com. And my name is all one word. Lower left. And then Ricky Bishop is her name, one word, R-I-C-K-I, B as in boy, I-S-H-O-P at yahoo.com.
Otherwise, and we'd encourage people to come out and
certainly,
see the show.
Certainly come. If you come just for the presentation and just to watch, it's $5. But to enter, it's $30. And you might want to consider entering online. It's, if you're comfortable doing that, that's much easier. The website would be www.wiscartists.org. And then the gallery always has hard copy applications, and then we can take checks online. You can use a credit card. So whatever works for you. And then again, call us if you have questions. We're happy to answer questions. Again, the gallery is open 11 to 3, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday 10 to 2. And our phone number is 608-649-1700. I'll try again. 608-649-1700.
Okay. Good. And if people want to have any other questions, as you mentioned, for the upcoming show at Wyoming Valley Cultural Arts Center, you might want to know, how is it going to be displayed? What do I need to do? You know, how is it going to be hung? Those kind of things can be answered too, I'm sure.
Yeah, happy to do that. Again, they have what's called a walker system, which is it's good lighting. But it means every 2D piece has to have a wire and little hooks that the wire goes into. It cannot have what's called a sawtooth, which is that thing that goes at the top of a 2D piece that has little teeth that look like it, because that can't hang on the system. And then 3D, we will have pedestals to display everything. We will have labels, but we can answer any of those questions. If you stop by the gallery, call us, email Ricky or I, and we can always point you to Aaron, who does the teens. If you are someone that has those kinds of questions, we can give you her email and her phone number.
And hopefully area high school art teachers are encouraging their students to do this as well.
Yeah, I mean, we really want to encourage teachers. The thing is, we, as human beings, we undervalue our high school teachers, all teachers, because they are so busy and they're so overworked. So we try to make it easiest as we can for them. But high school teachers, we encourage you, because your kids are busy, but you have those kids that are, art is their thing. They're not into sports, they're not into, you know, they may be, but often they're not. And so we'd really like them to participate. And again, if you're a homeschooler or you are homeschooled, contact the gallery. We're happy to help you.
It's a call to action now for artists in the Richland Center, Spring Green area, and all of Southwest Wisconsin. Again, entry and payment due by Saturday, March 29th. The artwork is due by the 5th, and then the show goes on through the upcoming the 19th of April. So thank you for what you do and encouraging artists in the area, Sally.
Oh, thanks, Phil, so much. And we're hoping people can participate. It'd be a great experience.
We hope so. Come back and see us again.
I sure will. Thank you.
Sally Probasca joining us here on this portion of the morning show.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Paul from Prescription Center. For over 40 years, we have been a trusted member of the health care of our community. We've always been here for everyone. From West Seminary Street, where it all started, to the hospital, and now to Sexonville Road, we have provided honest advice, low prices, and with the help of many of our friends, a pay-it-forward account to help those that can't afford their medication. We are humbled by the trust we have earned. We have always made every effort to make pharmacy affordable to all. We accept all insurances because you deserve to have your plan honored. The only area pharmacy to take TRICARE and CHAMP VA. What better way to say thank you to those who served? We thank all for their trust. If you want this type of service, let us be your pharmacy of choice.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Does your employer offer 6 weeks of paid time off in your first year? Rockwell Automation does. How about a $2,500 sign-on bonus? A 401k with company match? Annual bonuses for all employees? Rockwell offers all that and more, including paid parental leave, tuition reimbursement, unlimited referral bonuses, and endless growth opportunities. This isn't your typical manufacturing job. It's a great place to work because of the great people who work there. Join the team. First shift starts over $20 an hour. Second shift over $22 an hour. Apply at rockwellautomation.com/careers. Search Richland Center or stop by any Wednesday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for an on-the-spot interview. Rockwell Automation, where talent meets opportunity.
Celebrating the life of your loved one is a commitment all of us at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service take very seriously. I'm Nick Hodge. We have helped families since 1889 celebrate, honor, and remember the life of a loved one. Our promise to you is to provide service that allows you to be able to say goodbye while finding comfort and healing along the way. And we're available to answer your questions at any time at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service in Richland Center in Muscadet.
If you run a small business these days, you know just how challenging things can get. But you're a natural-born problem solver, so it's all good. Still, it doesn't hurt to have some good neighborly help. Like yourself, State Farm agents are also small business owners. This enables them to help you choose the right insurance coverage to fit your small business needs. So why not insure with a small business with a fellow small business owner who also happens to be a good neighbor? Call, text, or stop by Julie Karen State Farm in downtown Richland Center. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind. Like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control. So you're on your own with the wasps. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Author David Benjamin is on the phone line live with us this morning here on WRCO. We've talked a lot about his books in the past, the last kid books, and lots of great stuff through the years. Well, he has a new one coming out about his experiences in Paris, and we welcome him along the phone line here today. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Phil. It's good to talk to you again.
Great to have you on this first day of spring. How about it?
I hadn't noticed. It's cold out.
I know. I hadn't noticed either. So the new book coming out is called An Apartment in Paris. And I know that you spend quite a bit of time in Paris, don't you?
Yes. We bought the apartment in 1995 after visiting Paris frequently on my wife's vacation. My wife does watercolors. She's a very good painter, besides being one of the best journalists I know. Her favorite subject for painting was Paris. So when we were living in Tokyo and then in California, every time she had a vacation from her job, we spent 2 weeks in Paris, and she painted, I took pictures, I did some writing, and we got interested in finding a place to live in Paris on the theory that if you're going to own real estate, you should own it not where you have to be, but where you want to be.
Hmm. Good point. You've spent a little time there. How are tourists such as myself viewed upon by the locals in Paris?
That's one of my pet issues. I think the Parisians, as a rule, are more tolerant of tourists than I am. I watched their behavior, and actually, one of the themes of this book, one of the humorous themes, is the behavior of tourists, especially American tourists, who really don't understand what I think of as Paris etiquette. And so, there are a lot of funny episodes where we are eating out or in somewhere in Paris, and we just stop and stare with a kind of an amazement at how boorish tourists can be, I try to handle this, of course, with humor. I don't exactly tear people apart, but there are some fun scenes in the book about how tourists behave, and also there's also the point that you know, this book is, you know, we started going to Paris in 1990. We've been going to Paris, staying there, living there from time to time ever since then. And this book was early in our period in Paris, and so it was a kind of a chronicle of our education in Paris as we hunted for an apartment there.
It gives a little tour of the bistros and cafes, which you know, eating out is one of the prime things in Paris, isn't it?
One of the things that I tell friends who come to Paris or anybody actually is that you should budget for bistro meals. There are a lot of tourist traps that draw tourists in for semi-authentic French food, but I advise people to get a good bistro guidebook, most bistros are affordable. They're not McDonald's. They're not cheap food. They're not fast food. And you know, your typical two people eating out in Paris is in the range of $100, $150, and you should budget for that because Paris is the best city in the world to eat out, and you should prepare for that. And you should, you know, and so I tell people, the most important thing you can do in Paris is every evening eat out at a place that's cozy and fun and has excellent food. And those are easy to find. Paris is full of places like that.
Yeah, they certainly are. The other thing, you know, is sometimes the language barrier, but I've been amazed that most everyone can speak a little English there.
I have a problem with French menus because I'm so used to reading them in French that if I'm handed an English menu, I really don't understand what the food is. But our experience, and this is another piece of advice I give to people, is that everybody takes a Rick Steve or a Frommer or a Fodor guidebook with them to Paris, and there's always a section of French phrases. And if you go into a bistro or a restaurant and you try to speak a little bit of French and you bungle it, the waiter will appreciate your effort and he will switch to English and help you out. But if you believe that really loud English is French, you won't get a whole lot of help from the waiter in that case. So even a little bit of French, even badly pronounced and ungrammatical, is better than just depending entirely on your only language.
Will it be a good read for somebody who is planning a trip to Paris?
Yeah. This is my fourth book that takes place in Paris. The first one I published was called Three's a Crowd, which is a murder story. And then I wrote a mystery called Skullduggery in the Latin Quarter. Year before last, I published a novel within a novel based on bistro visits called Bistro Nights. An apartment in Paris is the fourth of my Paris quartet, I guess. And any one of those books is an effective assistant to going to Paris because Joko and I at this time have become old hands at Paris. We know the city pretty much from edge to edge, and the little things that you learn in the course of reading any book that's set in another city, in a strange place, in an exotic place, is helpful if you're going to be visiting it sometime soon.
Did you write it while you were in at home in Madison, or did you write it while you were in France?
You know, that's an interesting thing. I wrote it probably around about 25 years ago, and I set it aside. There were complications in the structure of the book that I didn't think would be easy to sell to a publisher, but now of course I'm my own publisher. I just thought it was a little bit too personal to really really be publishable. But we have a friend in Paris. Her name is Roberta Beardsley. She helped us find our apartment, and she's still a friend. We still go out with her. We still have great fun with her. And Roberta, we call her our guardian angel. And Roberta, our guardian angel, encouraged me. She had a copy of the manuscript that I'd given her, and she encouraged me to go back to it and think about publishing it. And my wife, Joko, had the same attitude. And so I did go back to it, and I realized that it was better than I expected it to be. And so I went through the entire book in hard copy and transcribed the whole thing, added some material, and edited it in my inimitable editing style, and came out with a manuscript that I was pretty happy with. And I'm looking forward to putting this getting this out on the street.
So you put out books that were, you know, loosely based on you growing up in Toma area, and, you know, Last Kid books, and we had you on when you were talking about the book Killing Kennedy as well. So you kind of rotate and alternate what style or what kind of book you're going to put out next, David?
Yeah, I'm notorious for my inability to stick to one genre. You know, the serious publishers hate that kind of thing. They want writers to do the same book over and over again. Actually, you know, there's a passage in the book that I put in the front of the book that brings together, you know, that my background with life in Paris, and I've got it up on my screen. Is it okay if I read it to you?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. The setup for this is that we live on a street called Rue Saint-Severin. It's named after the church on the street, which is a 12th century church. It's the same age as Notre Dame. excuse me. Walking toward our door from Rue Saint-Jacques, I look up. The early sun reflects off the modest steeple of Saint-Severin, illuminating the 800-year-old stone and spreading sharp-edged shadows among the buttresses, roof peaks, and gargoyles. The gargoyles jut out over the street, blind and gape-mouthed, stained, wind-scored, and eternal against a jagged lapis sky. Seeing this street is a humbling stroll through time and art. It's a miracle of history that has survived the depredations of countless generations of demolition mankind. Living on this street is a stroke of remarkable fortune. I started out on Pearl Street in Toma, Wisconsin, population 44,500. Now my address is Rue Saint-Severin, Paris. This might be the greatest impossibility since Tiny Tim had a top 40 hit. That's the end.
Oh, that's awesome. It's funny that you mentioned music, too. So one of my Paris experiences was I recorded my program before our trip, and I was doing a tribute to 1967. So I left. The last song I played, we got off the plane and got out of the car, walked into this cafe in Paris. It was the first song I heard in Paris. It was the same song I'd played when I left America. So I kind of noted that there seems like a great love for 60s music there at some of the establishments.
One of the interesting things is that Paris. You know, I'm a big jazz maven, and Paris is known as a kind of a refuge for jazz musicians, guys like Dexter Gordon and Eartha Kitt and so forth. But when you go into cafes and stuff. Very often what you hear is soft rock from the 60s and 70s, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The other thing you mentioned when you were reading there, too, is the other thing that amazed me was the age of the buildings. You know, some of the years on the cornerstones just blew me away.
Paris has a certain color. One author wrote about the fact that there's this kind of consistent beige to Paris, and that's because most of the buildings that went up before the 20th century were built from limestone that was quarried from underneath the city. The city is built on a huge mass of limestone. And so you get that consistent color all through the city, and that kind of that tone, and you know, and the color changes with the sunlight. If you stand in front of Notre Dame, for instance, in the morning, the towers are both of a kind of a deep gray. But if you go there at 7 o'clock at night when the sun is going down, the limestone is suddenly pink, and it's a remarkable feature of the city. And of course, the other thing is that the limestone quarries were turned into catacombs, where 6 million poor people were buried under the city after they cleared out all the cemeteries and all the churches and charnel houses in the city. And the catacombs are a wonderful experience.
The book is An Apartment in Paris, David Benjamin, the author, and I understand it actually officially gets released in April. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm going to press any day now, and it should be off the press about the middle of April, yeah. And you can be... You can actually pre-order it now, I think. I'm working with my distributor, but it can be pre-ordered at my website, which is www.lastkidbooks.com.
Okay, wonderful. Any other books coming out this year, David?
Yeah, for the my fall book is going to be, I think, a collection of my essays called Benjamin's Mess.
Well titled. All right, David, we appreciate you checking in with us so much, and good luck with the new book.
Oh, thank you very much, Phil.
Author David Benjamin joining us in An Apartment in Paris, and you can check that out. And, of course, check it out at Okooch Books and Libations. Locally here, Daniel can always get copies of those books for you as well.
Richland Grand Telephone Cooperative's annual meeting is Saturday, March 22nd, 2025 at the Blue River Community Building. Join us at 10:30 to stay informed and engaged with your cooperative. We look forward to seeing you.
Feeling better is about feeling all kinds of things. You want to feel healthy, sure. But you also want to feel heard and understood, valued, even, well, loved. That's what we want, too. We're Amplify Health, and we think the best way to care for someone is to care about them. That's why all our treatments include a little empathy. Welcome to healthcare that's all about caring. Welcome to Amplify Health by Gunderson. A little empathy changes everything.
Get the lowest prices of the year at the 54th Annual Sales Fair, on now at Nelson Egger Center in Viroqua. Huge savings on gates, fencing, seed, and more for your farm. Unbeatable deals on Milwaukee Power Tools. Buy one, get one free on gallons of paint. Plus, get $8 credit towards our already low prices with the junk battery trade-in sale. Check out all the deals at NelsonEggerCenter.com. Sales Fair, on now through Saturday, March 22nd at Nelson Egger Center, downtown Viroqua.
We have on the morning show line today Greg Kinney, representing Riverdale Communities Education Foundation. They have an 8-pin tap bowling tournament this Sunday. Greg, I'm not sure that you could pack more into one day.
Yeah, we do. It's a busy day. We have two bowling shifts, 11 and 1:30. 11 o'clock is filling up quickly. There's still some room on the second shift, so we're still willing to take more people. That's for sure. But it's a busy day. We have a bucket raffle. We have 50-50 raffle, silent auction, door prizes for everybody that bowls. So it's a fun day. It's relaxing. You know, people, you don't have to be a good bowler to bowl. Just come and have some fun and have a chance to win some stuff and enjoy the day.
That's kind of the case with 8-pin tap. Some of the non-good bowlers like me can also maybe compete with some of the others too, can't we?
Yeah. 8-pin tap is makes it a little more easier for the people that don't bowl on a regular basis, that's for sure. And there are different groups that play different games with the 8-pin tap. So it's a fun atmosphere. We've had, you know, every year we'll have some people that have never bowled that'll come and and take part in it, and they really enjoy it, and they say, well, we'll be back next year. And so that's what you really hope for. You know, it's a community event for our schools, and, you know, for our fundraising, and that it indirectly ends up helping the students and teachers at Riverdale, that's for sure.
The Communities Education Foundation Awards Day is coming up. That's just a couple of months away, Greg.
Yeah.
It hardly seems possible.
Yeah, it's the first week in May when we're going to be giving out our awards. The students and teachers are on spring break this week, and then when they get back next Monday, the application forms will go out to all the teachers, and they'll have 3.5 weeks to figure out what they want and get them sent back to us, and then we'll go through them and hand out as much as we can. Last year it was over $18,000, you know, and that was our best day by far. So we're happy to do it, but it takes these fundraisers, like, you know, this weekend, and then the golf one is the first weekend in August, and so they're very important for everything we do to help keep raising money.
Yeah, they all add up. Which one probably makes the most money? Is the golf outing?
Really, actually, the golf and the bowling. We seem to get more donations the day of the bowling. And so I would say they're about even, yeah, when we're all said and done. We have a lot of people that really enjoy the golf, and I've had people telling me for a month already that make sure you have our team down. And so we fill up really quickly for that once we turn the corner here and the weather gets nice. And so that's usually not a problem filling that. But the bowling is, you know, it's an enjoyable day too. And we get quite spirited bidding on the silent auction items because, you know, everybody's still inside all day long. And so if there's something that you're interested in, people will hang around and keep bidding. So that's always the fun part of it.
And you don't have to bowl. I think it's more of a social event, isn't it?
Yeah. No, you can come and just buy bucket raffle tickets and 50-50 tickets, and you can just come and visit, have a meal at the bowling alley. The bowling alley does a great job of helping us host this, and always serves really good food. And so it's a lot like Ed Chitwood's, you know, fundraiser as well. You just hope that people come and have some fun, and they go out of there with something, and have enjoyed the day.
Well, the weather isn't going to be perfect, and that's probably a good thing. If it's too nice, then you worry about that too, don't you?
Yeah, you do. You hope it isn't an ice storm or a snowstorm. Or we've had such nice weather, you know, for the most part, all winter, and then whenever you're hosting an event, you always look ahead at the weather forecast. That's just natural, I guess. But so we'll see, you know. Hopefully the people can get there and get home safely, and everybody will enjoy the day, and we'll make some money at it.
I know you'd leave something out if I ask you to list all of the possible prizes and things donated, but does anything stick out that you'd like to highlight here in terms of things people can bid on?
So in the silent auction, we have a set of beanbag boards that have been donated by a local carpenter, and we have a saw that has been painted by a young artist in Richmond Center there that is going to say Riverdale Chieftains on it. We have brewer tickets that are always very popular. They're seats that are like four rows off of the field, right behind the dugout. We have some pitchers that have been donated. So there's quite a few items that draw, you know, a lot of popularity. And we'll have a couple of quilts as well from people that are on our committee that have made. So, and then the bucket raffle is, those are items that you buy raffle tickets and you just put it in whatever bucket you want, if you know, of that item. And we have lots of gift certificates. Shoebox is always very good to us. We'll have Mallard's tickets and those, golf course certificates, you know, just a wide variety in that. And we have young kids that come, and so there's there's candy bouquets and just all kinds of neat stuff. Our ladies on our committee do a wonderful job of putting together stuff that's age-appropriate for them as well. So.
Well, I hope a lot of people will come out. I know the shifts are at 11 and 1:30, and if somebody wants a specific shift, they probably should sign up in advance, shouldn't they?
Yeah, you really should call ahead. And you can call me if my number is 608-537-2359. That's really the best way. You can call the bowling alley, too, if they don't get a hold of me. But they would prefer you call me because they're really busy when they are open. So, but if you want to make sure that you get on the shift and bowl with a group of people that, you know, if you're bringing three or four people and you all want to bowl together, then that's really the best way is to sign up ahead of time. So.
Well, by helping out here one way or another, you really are investing in education in the Riverdale area, aren't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Our goal as a committee is to continue to help keep Riverdale, you know, at the forefront of a lot of things in education, whether it be math, reading, all the criteria that, you know,